Okay, let's jump right into it. Today, we're diving deep into something really fundamental to economics. The circular flow of income. If you've ever wondered how money sort of zips around the economy, connecting, you know, your paycheck to the price of your morning coffee, well, this model is basically your map. We've got a stack of sources here, notes, summaries, definitions, all focused on giving us a hopefully crystal clear picture of this core concept, our mission in this deep dive, to unpack these sources and show you why this flow matters.
And it really does matter. Yeah. What's fascinating here is how this model simplifies the incredibly complex web of economic activity. It helps us visualize the connections between households, businesses, government, and, well, the rest of the world. Understanding this flow is essential to grasping why economies grow, why they might slow down, or, you know, even why prices change. It shows how seemingly simple individual transactions build up to this massive interconnected system.
Okay, let's unpack this then. And our sources suggest starting with the most basic version first. Right. So picture the simplest possible economy. In this model, often called the circular flow in a closed economy, we strip things right down. Just two main players. Like as a household and businesses, which we economists call firms. And crucially, there's no government intervention, no buying or selling internationally, just households and firms interacting.
Exactly. It's the bare bones.
So how does money move here? Think about what households that firms need and vice versa. Households own the factors of production. That's things like labor, you know, your work, land, capital, like tools, machinery and enterprise, the ability to start and run a business. Households provide these to firms,
mm-hmm.
and in return, firms pay households income. Wages for labor, rent for land, interest for capital, and profits for enterprise.
Right, the payments for those factors.
Yeah. Now households have money. So what do they do with it? Well, they spend it. They spend it on the goods and services that firms produce, the stuff you buy every day. This spending becomes revenue for the firms. And guess what firms do with that revenue?
Yeah, they use it to pay for the factors of production again.
Exactly. They use it to pay for the factors of production from households all over again. See the loop? It's this continuous cycle. Production by firms leads to income for households, which leads to spending by households, which then fuels more production.
Money just keeps circling around. It's a neat, self-contained system in this simple model.
It is.
Right. Yeah. But of course, the real world is a lot more complex than just households and firms trading back and forth. So the sources expand the model to what's called the circular flow in an open economy. This is where we add the government and the foreign sectors into the picture. And these additions create new ways for money to flow into and out of that basic loop we just talked about.
Okay, so more players, more pathways for the money.
Precisely. Let's look at the government first. The government interacts with both households and firms. It collects taxes from them. That's money leaving the main flow, kind of like a leak.
Right. Taxes go out.
But the government also puts money back in. It spends money on public goods and services, things like building roads, paying teachers, providing health care, you know, the drill. It also makes what are called transfer payments, like pensions or unemployment benefits. These give income to households without them providing a factor of production directly in return for that specific payment.
Ah, okay. So money goes out in taxes, but comes back in through government spending and those transfers.
Exactly. The government is both taking money out and injecting it back in. Then there's the foreign sector. This covers all the international trade stuff. When businesses in our country sell goods and services to people or companies abroad, that's called exports. This brings money into our economy from outside its foreign spending, becoming income here, an injection.
Makes sense. Money coming in from overseas sales.
Right. On the flip side, when we buy goods and services from other countries, those are imports. That's our domestic spending, sending money out of our economy to pay other countries.
So that's money leaving our flow.
Yes, that's a leakage. So in this more complete open economy model, the total national income, often written as Y, isn't just household spending anymore. It's the sum of all the different types of spending on the things our economy produces. As the source material shows, the national income equation becomes Y equals C plus I plus G plus X.
Okay, let's break that down. Y is the total national income.
Right, the value of everything produced domestically. And that equals C.
C is household consumption spending.
Yep, consumption. Yep. Plus I, that's investment spending by businesses on capital goods, like new factories or equipment.
Got it. C plus I.
Plus G, which is government spending on goods and services.
Okay.
And finally, plus that bit in parentheses, XM. That's exports minus imports. It's basically the net effect of international trade on spending within our economy.
So X minus M is how much more or less foreigners spend here compared to how much we spend abroad.
Exactly. The equation is just adding up all the sources of demand for the goods and services our economy produces.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, because you mentioned earlier that this flow isn't always perfectly balanced. There are things that can add money to the flow from outside, and things that can take money out of the flow, and these are called injections and leakages.
That's the terminology, yes.
So think of injections as like new money entering that basic household firm loop we started with. The sources list three main types we just touched on. Investment. That's when firms spend money to expand, buying new machinery or buildings.
Mm-hmm. Spending on capital.
Government spending, G, when the government buys goods and services. And exports, X, when people in other countries buy things from us. These all inject new demand and income into our economy, right?
Correct. They add spending power to the circular flow.
And then there are leakages, sometimes called withdrawals. These are parts of the income that households or firms receive that don't immediately get spent back on domestically produced goods and services in that simple loop. There are three main types listed here, too. Savings, S, when households or firms, you know, don't spend all their income but put some aside, often in banks or other financial institutions.
Income that isn't consumed.
Right. Then taxes, T, those compulsory payments to the government, and imports, sending our money on goods and services made in other countries.
So savings, taxes, imports, S, T, M, those are the leakages.
These leakages represent money exiting that immediate domestic spending flow. It's not necessarily gone forever, but it's not actively circulating in that core loop at that moment.
Well put.
So the core idea, as I understand it from the sources, is this. If more money is being injected into the flow than is leaking out, so if I plus G plus X is bigger than S plus T plus M,
yes,
then the total national income and economic activity will likely expand. The flow gets bigger. But if more money is leaking out than is being injected, so if S plus T plus M is greater than I plus G plus X, then the flow shrinks and national income contracts.
Exactly right. It's like thinking about the water level in a bathtub. Injections are the faucet adding water. Leakages are the drain removing water. If the faucet runs faster than the drain, the water level rises. If the drain is faster, the level falls.
That's a great analogy.
And understanding that balance or imbalance between injections and leakages helps us understand the overall health of the economy. It tells us whether it's in what economists call equilibrium or disequilibrium.
Okay, equilibrium sounds like balance.
Precisely. Equilibrium in this model is when the total amount of planned injections equals the total amount of planned leakages. So I plus G plus X equals S plus T plus M. When that happens, the economy is considered stable, at least in the short run. The level of output and income isn't tending to grow or shrink because the amount being added perfectly offsets the amount being withdrawn. The sources describe this as a state where essentially everything produced is being purchased and resources are being utilized in a stable way. There's no inherent pressure for the overall level of economic activity to change.
So injections equal leakages. Things are stable. What happens when they're not equal? That's disequilibrium.
That's disequilibrium. Mm-hmm. It happens when that balance is off, when total planned injections and total planned leakages aren't equal. This means the total spending pressure isn't matching the amount of income being removed from the active flow. Our sources describe two main types of disequilibrium, depending on which side is bigger. First, if injections are greater than leakages, so I plus G plus X, S plus T plus M, there's more spending power entering the flow than is leaving it. Think about that. Demand is high, maybe even higher than what the economy can currently produce comfortably.
So too much money chasing too few goods.
In effect, yes. This tends to create upward pressure on prices, leading to inflation. This situation is sometimes called an inflationary gap. Demand is outstripping supply at current prices.
Okay, injections bigger than leakages, potential inflation. What's the other side?
The other side is when leakages are greater than injections, LI or S plus T plus MI plus G plus X. Here, more income is being withdrawn from the circular flow than is being added back in through investment, government spending, and exports. This reduces the overall demand for goods and services. When demand falls, businesses might cut back on production, which means less income is generated, and that can lead to rising unemployment.
Ah, so that's a slowdown.
Exactly. This situation is often called a deflationary gap, or sometimes a recessionary gap. There isn't enough demand to keep everyone employed and resources fully utilized.
Right. The examples in the source material really help make this concrete.
They do. Consider this one. Imagine households suddenly decide to save a lot more. maybe they're worried about the future, that's an increase in leakage S. Now, if businesses don't simultaneously decide to invest more, so injection I doesn't rise to match, you've got less spending circulating overall.
Because saving went up, but investment didn't follow.
Right. Less consumption spending means businesses see demand fall. They might cut production, maybe lay off workers. That drop in income can ripple through the economy and trigger a recession, a classic deflationary gap scenario.
Okay, I see how that works. And the opposite.
Conversely, imagine a surge in exports. Maybe foreign countries suddenly love our products. That's a big injection. X goes way up. If there isn't a corresponding rise in leakages like imports or savings, then you've got a lot more foreign money flowing in, boosting demand for domestic goods.
Uh-huh.
National income rises.
Which sounds good.
It can be. But if the economy is already producing near its full capacity, that extra demand could push prices up across the board. That's how you can get an inflationary gap. Too much demand relative to supply.
So it's this constant dynamic. The economy is trying to find that balance, but changes in saving, investment, government actions, or trade can push it into these inflationary or deflationary gaps.
Precisely. Disequilibrium is common.
And this is exactly where policymakers, particularly the government, try to step in, isn't it, to manage these imbalances?
Yes, that's a key implication of this model.
As the sources note, governments use tools, primarily what's called fiscal policy, which is basically adjusting their own spending levels and taxation levels to try and counteract these gaps and nudge the economy back towards equilibrium.
Mm-hmm. Try to stabilize things.
So if they see a deflationary gap, you know, too many leakages, not enough injections, leading to unemployment and slow growth, the government might increase its own spending. That's a direct injection. G goes up. Or it might cut taxes, which reduces the leakage. T goes down, leaving households and firms with more income to potentially spend.
Right. Aiming to boost overall spending and get the flow expanding again.
And if they see an inflationary gap, too much injection, prices rising too fast, they might do the opposite.
Exactly. They might reduce government spending, cutting injection G, or increase taxes, boosting leakage T, to take some spending power out of the flow and cool things down, reduce that inflationary pressure.
Okay. So they use G and T to try and balance out the overall I plus G plus X versus S plus T plus M equation.
That's the core idea of countercyclical fiscal policy, viewed through this circular flow lens.
Hmm.
So pulling it all together, this model gives us a framework. We've seen how the basic flow works in a simple, closed economy, then how adding the government and international trade complicates things by creating these points where money can enter the injections, I, G, and X.
And points where money can leave the leakages, S, T, and M.
Exactly. And crucially, how the balance or imbalance between those total injections and total leakages determines whether the economy is stable, in equilibrium, or tending towards expansion, potentially with inflation, or contraction, potentially with unemployment. And that, in turn, influences what governments might try to do with their policies.
That's a fantastic summary. It really shows how this seemingly simple diagram helps visualize the entire economy as this dynamic, interconnected system. Every decision to save, every government purchase, every export shipment, it all affects that flow.
It absolutely does. And grasping where income originates, where it flows, and how those additions and subtractions balance or crucially don't balance is, well, it's fundamental to understanding the health and the direction of the macroeconomy, which I think raises an important question for reflection.
Yeah, think about those examples we discussed. How a simple individual decision, like you deciding maybe to save a bit more each month, or a big global event like increased foreign demand for goods produced here, how that can ripple through this entire system we've mapped out. It really highlights the delicate balance required for a stable economy, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the circular flow of income. We hope this helps you keep exploring how these economic flows touch your own life and the world around you.